Living in a chemical world, and I'm a chemical nondescript person. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl or boy. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical.
Hello, and welcome to Chemical World. Hello, everyone out there, and happy holidays. I am Kenna Crampton, and I've got my co-host here,
Maggie Seldin, peer recovery coach for Mind Springs Health. So happy to be here with you today, Kenna.
Really nice to be here with you today as well. We are doing this via telephone for the first time ever, so this is exciting.
Yeah, actually the first time we've had Chemical World where I'm not actually with you today, but happy we're making it work. Just like everyone else out there, we're doing what we can to keep going in spite of all of the constant changes we've all been experiencing this year.
Totally. That's I was talking to somebody the other day and they were like, as long as you just have zero expectations, then things are good.
Absolutely. I just don't even put things in my schedule anymore because I know they're going to change every day.
Totally. We have something really exciting planned for today, yeah.
Yeah, but before we get into that, I just wanted to say congratulations, Kenna, on your 2 years of sobriety as of December 4th.
Oh, thank you.
Clap, 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 clap. I'm so proud of you, and you are just such an inspiration.
Thank you. Yeah, it kind of came and went, and I did actually on the day take a second to acknowledge the fact that that 2 years ago I had been completely wasted, and that was the last time.
That is so awesome. But I just wanted to at least take a moment to celebrate you for that, because 2 years is huge for sure. But I'm very excited that today we will be having a special guest on our show.
In Chemical World, we find it very important to share all different types of people's stories, because we're all different, but we're all kind of going through the same thing. So hearing different stories from different people we think is so important. And this time on Chemical World, we have Jeff Tiford. Hey, Jeff.
Hey, Kenna, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
So far, so good. Thanks.
Yeah, well, thank you so much, Jeff, for your willingness to be on the show and share your story. And I wanted to just start by asking why you decided to start sharing your story and why this is important to you.
Well, I think it kind of comes back to something Kenna just actually said, almost word for word, or maybe it was you. Sorry, this is all kind of new to me, but I decided to start sharing it because, you know, I'm just like you, only different, you know? I realized at some point that my story might resonate and help somebody else out. And I just decided to take a chance and give it a shot.
Absolutely. And I know you were interviewed by the Aspen Times, and I think that article should be out today as of the day this is airing. And, you know, that was exactly what I told them when they asked me about the work you're doing, is that I think your stories are very relatable and kind of said very similar things about how, you know, we're all different, but there are some very human themes in what we have to share.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. Absolutely.
Yeah. And Jeff, tell us about the working on yourself approach and how you feel this is more effective, though less proactive and preachy yourself to alienation.
So the first piece of the answer to that question for me is that, you know, if we all spend so much time, especially if you're a parent or grandparent, you're dating somebody, it always seems like you've got to worry about the other guy first. And I think it's just a natural human thing. It's not a selfish deal. It's not a pity thing. You just try to, everything else comes first. And when you start working on yourself, it's finally about you for a change. Mm. It's finally about myself for a change. And I think we're pretty slow to act on that because it sounds selfish, I guess it kind of is. Selfish is a word that has kind of taken on a bad meaning, perhaps. So if you've got to be a little selfish about it for a little while, I mean, that's the only way you're going to get any better, is by finally recognizing that once in a while, it gets to be about you. And now it's your turn.
Yeah, I love that. And I think that that's so true. I think in our society, you know, we have this idea of if we're worrying about ourselves, we're being selfish. And I know that was something I identified in myself a long time ago, is that I'm a very selfless person. I put other people ahead of myself, and just realizing that I was hurting myself, and that, yeah, sometimes we have to be a little selfish, right?
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, for what I've found just in talking to people, you know, because when we start down this road, when we decide we're going to take this quest, you know, to get better, to feel better, and we start feeling better, and we, you know, once you start feeling better, you just, you can't help but want to share it. You know what I mean? You can't help but want to share it. It's not that you're any better than anybody else. It has nothing to do with that. You just want to share it with the world. And sometimes that's a tough pill for other people to swallow for various reasons.
Yeah.
Pardon the pill reference.
Oh, no, that's fine. We talk about pills here for sure. I think that's so true. And so, you know, Ken and I were lucky enough, you shared some of your writings with us, just some of your stories.
Sure.
And something that, you know, I kind of developed our questions off of some things that stood out to me in those stories.
Okay.
And one thing you talk about is how we can, when we enter recovery, we can put off the people closest to us. The people who we think would be the most supportive are kind of turned off by our recovery. Can you speak to that?
I can, actually, through plenty of experience, as a matter of fact. And, you know, so what happens is when we start to set down the road to recovery, or whatever title you want to pop on it, you know, we start to change, and we start to change in so many ways. And we almost become a stranger to those closest to us because we do start to change. They become very, I don't know if I would use the word comfortable with who we've become or who we are or who we were, but they've gotten used to it. It's the person they recognize. And when you start to change, and especially the more drastic the change is, you just sort of start to become a stranger to people.
Yeah, yeah. And I really relate to that. Kennedy, do you want to say something?
Oh, no, I relate to that a lot as well, too. I feel like I've lost a few friends just because we're not interested in the same things anymore. And they kind of do get that feeling like, I don't know, like I feel like they think I'm self-righteous, and it has nothing to do with that. I just not interested in what they're doing. But, yeah, what were you going to say, Maggie?
Well, yeah, the way I related to this, it reminded me of something my partner, who has a lot more time in recovery than I do, said to me about kind of my experience with this problem. And he said, don't expect anyone to give a bleep about your sobriety.
And,
I really like that. And yeah, I know in my life, like not even just recovery, the way when you were talking, Jeff, it reminded me of when I was telling my dad that I was going to run a 5K, and he literally looked at me and was like, who are you?
That's right.
And just how, you know, I think part of it too, especially in recovery and my experience, is that it's like you're kind of holding up a mirror to another person's addiction. When you talk about your recovery or your sobriety to someone who's struggling, it forces them to think about it, and so they don't want to think about it, and they kind of push you away in that sense.
Totally.
Yeah, I can definitely say that, yeah.
Yeah, I run into that a lot. Like, if I tell somebody that I don't drink or whatever, then they automatically feel like they have to start justifying their drinking to me. And I'm like, no, I do not care, and please have a drink. Please drink as much as you want in front of me.
Sure.
I don't care, but they automatically start feeling like they need to justify their drinking because you're doing something about yours. And you're like, hey, I'm in a different place than you are. No judgment.
Oh, no, I understand. And that's something that I think, you know, as we start to change, one of the things, you know, and we start to, you know, like I said, it's finally about us, right? It's finally about you for a change. every once in a while, I think it helps me to understand that people might be a little put off. And I try to keep that in mind, even though I'm like, oh, it's all about me and my change right now. Sometimes, you still have to exist in the world with other people. And I think that's something that it keeps me a little more grounded, I think, if I can just remember that. Not everybody is ready to make a change. Not everybody needs to make a change. And not everybody really wants to. So I just try to be as respectful of that as possible.
Yeah, I think that's something that's can be hard in your work sometimes because, we're at a place where we've made these changes and it's like we kind of have to put ourselves mentally back into that mindset of what it was like to be in that kind of pre-change state in order to support people because, many people, myself included, it's a long road to being ready for that change.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Yeah, and it starts a long time, in my opinion and in my experience. It started a long time before I actually even started to make any changes. I think it took me a while just to recognize some issues, and mm-hmm. And it could have been from a weird photograph somebody took of me where, they said, hey, Jeff, I looked over and it looks like my face is sliding off of my skull, and I was thinking, man, how did I ever operate like that? it's just sort of the changes really start way before the changes ever really start, I think.
Yeah, and I think that actually kind of leads, I totally agree. I think, I stopped drinking in 2018, but when I look back, my recovery started way before
Absolutely.
I didn't know it at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that leads really well into the next question. So you talk about, quote unquote, what it takes to get into recovery. And it reminded me of how someone I know talks about motherhood, that if you're waiting to be ready, it's never going to happen. So what do you think people need, if anything, or what can we do or what can individuals do to kind of feel like they're, quote unquote, ready for recovery?
That's such a great question. And I was just yesterday talking to a new friend of mine, actually. And we were talking about just this whole sort of dilemma, and how it seems like it's blowing up with the whole COVID thing and, mm-hmm. and what have you. First thing, what it takes, the first thing that worked for me, and I'll always go back to what worked for me. I'm not a therapist. I'm not a doctor. I have no certificates in anything. I'm a private pilot. I don't have a driver's license. Oh, and I did scuba diving for a while. Those are my big certificates in life. What it takes is to get started with recovery is first you got to stop blaming everything and everybody else. This is where it started for me. Many people, I should say, will start blaming the companies that manufacture these drugs. And then they start blaming the doctors that got them started and hung up on these drugs. Oh, this is in my case. There's a million other ways you can get started with all of this stuff. And then you got to cut them loose. You got to cut them loose. You cannot blame these guys. It's not going to get you anywhere except take longer and longer to get started. So I decided to cut the pharmaceutical guys a break. I decided to cut the doctors a break. These guys are all just doing their jobs. Okay, and then the last guy I decided to cut a break was me. The more time I spent blaming myself for all of this, the less time I spent getting through it. And so that is like, for me, that is just priority number one, is just stop blaming everybody else. The doctors, the manufacturers, those guys are all just doing their jobs. And the other thing that I would say is none of them ever started out thinking that they were going to get me the way I was. I never started out thinking I was going to be where I was. And in a room of 100 addicts or 100 alcoholics or 100 whatever you want to pick, none of those people ever thought they would be in that room. If they mm-hmm. had, they would never have been in that room. So that's what I think it takes to get started is just cutting everybody some slack. And then the other thing is, we all hear about somebody who has hit rock bottom. You hear that over and over again. Maybe you did. Maybe in somebody's mind, I hit rock bottom before they got started down the road to recovery, right? Well, if you haven't hit rock bottom, don't wait till you do.
Mm-hmm.
Why wait? It's just going to make it that much harder. And honestly, by the time you've hit rock bottom, you don't even know you're there anyway.
Yeah. Absolutely. And I think people sometimes hit it multiple times. But
I
love what you're saying. I think, what I'm hearing is, it kind of boils down to some personal responsibility.
Yeah, absolutely.
And also some personal compassion. One of the best pieces of advice somebody ever gave me was, I hope you treat yourself with as much compassion as you treat other people. And I try to tell myself that every day.
Multiple times a day you have to remind yourself that. I know that. At least that's how I feel.
Exactly right.
And I also think, everybody's rock bottom just is different, And I said that in another episode that we had, some people's rock bottom is homeless in the streets, and other people's rock bottom is just not being able to be as present as they'd like to be in their lives.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's always different.
Yeah. Tell us about your vision for a recovery, Jim, and what has inspired you.
Well, so what inspired me was once I started not taking Vicodin and just the painkillers that I was on, once I got started with that, I had a ton of clarity. And one of the most clear things to me was I was also diagnosed as a type 1 diabetic at about the age of, 45. So it was pretty late in life. I went through some illness I didn't recover very quickly from a very minor surgery. It all came down to being misdiagnosed as a type 2. I went from 145 pounds to 119 pounds in roughly 2 weeks.
Oh, wow.
It was with back pain, any other pain that I've ever had that I can remember anyway, that was probably more physically painful than anything I've ever gone through, and I couldn't make it stop. I just didn't know what would make it stop. I was not done with Vicodin at that point, so that always seemed to take the edge off, and I can speak to the edge that Vicodin takes off in just a moment. But when I started to take insulin, the doctor warned me. She said I'd feel a ton better. I felt a ton better. She said, I'd want to eat everything that wasn't nailed to the ground. And man, was she right. I ate everything. Mm-hmm. And in doing that, I went from 119 pounds to 186 pounds in about 5 or 6 months.
Oh, wow.
Where I didn't even recognize myself. I mean, I was huge. And it was all in my stomach. And I remember thinking, now I know why I'm so tired all the time. Because I've got my diabetes thing straightened out. My numbers are starting to come back in, but they're kind of erratic. And what I need to do, and I always worked out as a kid, so I decided I'll just start working out again. I had a gym in my basement that was being used to hold up plywood and dry towels and sheets and blankets. So I decided my first workout would be to clean my way to my gym, and I was exhausted by the time I had my gym ready. Then I just sat down and basically did sit-ups and push-ups and stuff like that until I felt I was ready to lift because I didn't want to fail. As far as starting a gym, what I really want to do with regard to starting that gym is initially, sort of in a couple of words, is I want to give people back to themselves. Does that make sense?
Oh, absolutely.
I want them to understand that it's okay to be there making themselves better, no matter what anybody says, no matter how many people, and they will roll their eyes at you when you start walking around and feeling better about yourself, because you definitely put out a pretty strong vibe when you feel better about yourself after feeling like crap for so long. you know?
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I think that this is a brilliant idea. One reason that I specifically am really intrigued by the concept of a recovery gym is because exercise is actually considered a treatment for stimulant use disorder. So for people addicted to meth or cocaine, this could be really beneficial. And, you know, beyond, I was actually on a call today about programs for stimulant use disorder and mentioned that to the facilitator. And he said, well, yeah, I definitely think that that could work. I think that it could make anyone feel better, you know, diet, exercise, water, sleep, nutrition. You know, I think it's these things we all know we're supposed to be doing, but it can be hard to implement. And I think we all know that there is this tendency in recovery to switch one vice for another. A lot of people who stop drinking eat a lot of sugar to kind of replace that. You know, there's a lot of different ways that that manifests. But so my partner, who's been sober, completely abstinent sober for 10 years, he works out every day. And that is his new coping mechanism for stress now that he doesn't have drugs and alcohol. And for me, I remember there was a year where I wasn't smoking cigarettes. And I remember my feeling was, well, my life is over, so I might as well just start exercising and eating right and being super healthy now. But, you know, it's true. It can make such a difference. Even if, you know, somebody is still using, just getting into the gym can completely change your self-concept.
Yeah.
And, you know, so, and like you said, you know, it would revolve around, and this is all, of course, still to be developed, because I'm sure I could spend 150 years trying to develop the concept and never actually do the gym, right? So what I'm trying to do is there's a few things that I want to work around. Specifically, first, obviously, is exercise. Secondly, is diet. And in diet, I also want to talk to whoever about hydration. When my back hurts, the first thing I do is drink a bunch of water. And I know it sounds like such a ridiculous thing to do, but typically it fixes the problem. And my back is pretty damn ugly. So if it fixes that problem, it's got to be a pretty effective piece of medicine. I found that aspirin is a miracle drug too, by the way. And so exercise, diet, hydration. And the other thing that I want to deal with is sort of what I call non-pity-based attention. You know, we're there to work on you. We care about where you're going with what you're doing. We care about why you even came to us in the first place. And that's the attention you're going to get. We're not going to worry about whether or not you're feeling particularly crappy about yourself that day. You know, that's a job I'm going to let you take care of. But we're going to show you how, once you get started, you're going to realize you deserve all of this. You deserve all of this, and you're going to want it more and more and more. And finally, one of the goals I want to do is work specifically hand in hand with healthcare, hand in hand, not just be another gym that they allow you to have a discount at, but I want to be able to somehow figure out how to facilitate actually working with doctors. And what I will always stress to people that decide to go down this road of improvement, whether it's with exercise or just getting off medication or whatever, is first include a doctor in your decision. If you don't like the way that doctor's handling you, there's a bunch of doctors. Find one that actually works with you.
Oh, that's great.
Absolutely. I think that is so amazing. And I think that regardless of where this goes and how long it takes, I'm just so grateful to have you in our community, Jeff, because I think that these are some really awesome things you're talking about.
Well, and the community that I'm in is kind of a lot of what inspired me, honestly. You know, I work for a great company. I work for Aspen Skiing Company. I've been here for 25 years. Anytime I come up with an idea for something, whether, you know, these guys, some of them probably would be shocked that I was ever stuck on medication, like, you know, with regard to painkillers or whatever. But they've always been so supportive of what I wanted to do, whether I was developing a safety and a whatever program for kids or whatever. these guys were always like, yeah, go for it. So I can't say that they've encouraged me to do what I'm doing right now, but I can say that a lot of what they've done for me has allowed me to just be energized, you know?
Yeah. That's so great. And I just have to say with the hydration part, how, because it is so important. And I think especially if you're just coming into recovery, you've probably spent the last however many years pretty dehydrated. I think when you're in the midst of it, like water is the last thing you are thinking about. So no matter what kind of drug you're into, water is probably not high priority. So yeah, hydration is so huge. So thanks.
Well, it's cheap and it's totally readily available.
Totally.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think that's great because, you know, I think a barrier in my work, you know, I'm always, because I'm somebody who lives with chronic pain and have not been able to be helped really at all by Western medicine. You know, I'm always advocating for yoga and meditation and exercise and nutrition. And of course, even I am not perfect at all of these things. But I think in our culture, people are really looking for that magic bullet. And the culture of opiates has made people think that that is a thing. And unfortunately, you know, it's just not the case. If we want to be healthy and be our best selves, it takes work. But it's good to know that, yeah, sometimes a big glass of water actually is a magic bullet.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And just to kind of expand on that a little bit too, Maggie, just the that being happy is a constant thing that you have to constantly keep at. You have to constantly keep up with your exercise and keep up with your yoga. It's not like you did yoga for a year and then you're gonna be good after that. You know, I think that's something that we kind of forget also in our culture, is that happiness is something that you have to constantly be in that working towards, you know, and not have be working towards something, but just be constantly doing.
If I could just sort of expand on that. So one of the things that I actually have a Facebook page. I don't know if you can even put that on the show here, but and basically
Definitely.
The page is followed by about, I don't know, probably 19 people. And it's just called Bodybuilding for a Lifetime. And that is not to say that I look anything like Arnold. I think Maggie could attest to that. however, sometimes the bodybuilding part is important. And sometimes the for a lifetime part is important. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what I'm trying to get at, I guess, with the gym, too, is that every once in a while, I find that I can do stuff now thanks to my working out, thanks to, you know, being free of painkillers. There's things I can do now that I couldn't have done even 4 years ago, a year ago, 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't have done them. And now I can. So every once in a while, you work on the bodybuilding part. You work on the exercise. You work on that. You do that, and that's the rule, not the exception. And then what you find is that the for-a-lifetime part shows up, and you can do it where you didn't used to be able to do that. And that's my angle, actually, is practicality. You know, every once in a while, the exercise does kind of get put on the shelf, but it's typically for something that matters at that very moment. And you know you're going to go back to your exercise because mm-hmm. it's pretty much all you think about while you're doing all the other stuff. So, every once in a while, it's okay to cut yourself some slack on the exercise if you've just got to get on with life for a second. But, you know, once you've started exercising, once you've started doing anything physical that you've grown to count on that's really changed you, it doesn't take long before you absolutely want to get back to it. And you do.
Definitely. And one other thing I kind of want to add to that is, for me, it's not so much about being, you know, healthy and fit now. It's about being able to be mobile if and when I'm older. And mm-hmm. something that I'm always thinking about and was reminded of the other day is that, you know, the idea that we naturally have physical and cognitive degradation in old age is actually a myth. there is, you know, natural muscle loss and things that happen. But if we keep our minds active and keep our bodies active, there's no reason we can't be that 95-year-old marathon runner. And so that's what really motivates me is
sure.
not just being healthy now, but, yeah, that lifetime of, mm-hmm. of good health.
Yeah.
And it's fun. One of the things that, since you just mentioned that, was, you know, I want to be the grandpa at my grandkids' high school graduation, you know, that's actually, like, able to do stuff with these guys. I don't want to be, like, the creepy grandpa that's trying to do stuff with a bunch of kids, but I definitely want to be the grandpa that can just go out and be present for these guys. And I think that, to me, that's, like, one of my personal little selfish goals, and I think those are important too, by the way, I would love to be the grandpa where one of my granddaughter's little friends went, turn around and in a good way went, dang, that's your grandpa? how great would that be, right? And that's who I want to be. And if it never happens, that's fine too. But that's my own little selfish goal, and sometimes that's what keeps me moving.
I think that's a pretty, pretty great goal. If there's anything else that you want to share, and you can absolutely, any Facebook or any promotional stuff, we would love for you to share.
Yes.
Okay. Well, my one Facebook page, and, you know, there's weeks I go where I, every morning, and if you look at the times, I typically enter stuff at 4 o'clock in the morning because that's when I get up to work out. Or that's when I'm just about to go work out. I've been up for about a half an hour before that, but, so it's Bodybuilding for a Lifetime, and it's just on Facebook. It's just a page. It's nothing real special. There's not a lot of advertisement. There's definitely not enough pictures. I'm working on that. But, I just want to, encourage people to just to give it a shot, you know, give yourself some credit. You spend so much time working on your job. You work with your family. You're working on your kids. You're working on boyfriends, girlfriends, wives, husbands, whatever, and we just forget about ourselves. And I think that's something that you sort of remember almost too late in life. And so I'm trying to inspire people maybe to think about this a little sooner than later. The other thing that I want to just really dispel real quick, in my opinion, is you look at an ad in any magazine, any paper that deals with physical fitness, and they'll show you a before picture of a fat person or an out-of-shape person, and then they show you an after picture of this same person completely ripped, right? And to me, that's a fantasy, and it's unachievable, and I wish people would stop doing that. To me, there's no such thing as before and after. There's just before and during. Everything else after before is during. Make sense?
Yeah, I love
yeah.
that.
And that's just sort of my battle cry.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Well, I just think that's fantastic. Kenneth, do you have any other questions or comments for Jeff today?
No, I don't think so. I do love that part that when you were talking about being selfish, and I do think that's important too, but
Yeah, do it.
It's too bad that it does have such a negative connotation to it, but I think it is very important. I don't think
you
can be
it, you know?
There for people if you're not there for yourself.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and that's, you know, there's an old saying, what if you don't take care of number one, you can't take care of everybody else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I believe it too.
It's so true. Well, thank you so, so much, Jeff, for being on Chemical World, and we just look forward to supporting you and your work in the community, and we're so grateful to have you.
Great. I appreciate it. I'm looking forward to helping. You know, for me, it's always going to be a learning experience. I don't plan to know it all ever. And, you know, for me, as long as I'm learning, I'm helping, and as long as I'm helping, I'm learning. So, yeah, I'm glad I can be people that need me. I'm glad I can be here for me, and I'm really glad you guys gave me this opportunity. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, well, yeah, we appreciate having you on, and yeah, thank you so much, Jeff. And
anytime.
Take care.
You too. Thanks, Ken. I appreciate it. Thanks, Maggie. It's been great.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
One thing I would like to throw out just really quickly is I got to thank my wife.
Yeah.
Please.
I got to thank my wife.
Yeah.
And so I get a little misty when I do that, because she could have had it so much easier with absolutely anybody else. I mean, we dated as kids. She should have known better when I came back into her life and asked her to marry me. She should have known better. She should have known it was not going to be a straightforward, super easy ride. And again, hey, one of the reasons I work out, I want her to still think I'm cool. How's that?
Fair enough.
So that's my final say on the radio.
Awesome, Jeff. Well, thank you again so much. And if I don't talk to you sooner, I just hope you have happy and safe holidays. And
you too.
See you and the fam.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, you guys stay healthy, okay?
Yeah, you too,
Will
Jeff.
Do.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for everything. We'll talk to you soon.
All right.
Sounds
bye.
Good.
All right. Bye-bye.
So Kenneth and I wanted to share an exciting new opportunity that we've been bringing to our community. We have begun an all-recovery support group that we hold every Wednesday night in virtual land on Zoom at 6 p.m., and you can find the information for that Zoom group on our Facebook page or in any of the community calendars from KDNK or the local newspapers. But this is an opportunity for anyone who is struggling with addiction or substance use, who has maybe been sober for a long time, or is just generally interested in recovery. These are open meetings to anyone in the community, and we follow all recovery pathways. So you don't have to be sober to come. You don't have to want to be sober to come. But at the end of the day, I think we all know that this has been a really hard year, and a lot of us might be using more substances than we feel comfortable with. And so this is a non-denominational opportunity. We are not affiliated with any religion or any anonymous 12-step group. This is a different kind of support group for those of you who might not be interested in traditional support groups, where you can come and talk about recovery in a safe space. This is not just an opportunity that I'm really excited to offer to the community as a alternative to traditional 12 steps, but it's something that I love. I get a lot out of these groups, for sure.
Yeah. Yes, I do too. We both, I think, broke down at one point just being able to talk about the kind of stuff that's going on in our minds right now, which is a lot and not always fun, happy, heartfelt things. Well, heartfelt, but not heart-shaped.
And, you know, while we are an alternative to normal 12 steps, we do share some things in common. And one of those is that what's shared in those spaces stays in those spaces. So you can feel comfortable coming to these groups, getting some stuff off your chest, maybe learning a little bit about recovery, and know what you share will not be shared outside of the group.
Yeah. So that was Jeff T. Ford. So thank you so much for joining us today for Chemical World. And for the extended version, there's a little bit more from Jeff. You can check that out on kdnk.org or Apple Podcast or Google Podcast. And our next episode will be airing on KDNK at 4:30 on January 11th.
And don't forget to check out Chemical World on all of your social media platforms. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.
And remember, you don't have to be sober
to keep your community clean.
Drugs may come and drugs may go, and that's all right, you see. Experience has made me rich, and now I can use safely. It might be beer, it might be dope, it may even be caffeine. But we all have a little something that keeps us on our feet. What's important is being safe and stopping the spread of disease. You do not have to be sober to keep your community clean. 'Cause we are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl or boy. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical gender nondescript. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical. We are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl. You know we are living in a chemical world, and I am a chemical girl.